Hey everyone, and welcome to another edition of the Arb Life podcast. I'm joined again tonight by Chris Coates and Brian Brock, and we're going to continue to wrap up on the topic of legends, geezers, tree climbing competition, and we're going to cover a couple other topics. But Chris, I'm going to give you the floor and open it up on the name change and sort of some of the feedback that came with that, and some of the things that you dealt with and what inspired that change. So the floor is yours, my friend.
Okay. ATC. What kind of music do chiropractors like?
I don't know. What kind?
Hip hop. All right. That was kind of dumb, but I think I started off something.
Nailed it.
Funny.
Nailed it.
Yeah. Anyway. All right, let's just dive right into some discussion we were having last night. I didn't get to kind of the elephant in the room. Bunch of my good friends got together. I really bounced the idea off of a number of people about the change in the name of Geezers, which is more so than the name. Obviously, the event is beloved. It's been around now for 14 years, and so it was honestly, I was just bent about the idea of changing the name of that comp. It was like, I don't know, at the same time, I was like, I'm still super dedicated to, the core of the event and what it means. So I was like, I feel like this is the right thing. I know this is the right thing to do. And because I really felt like to change the name could be just a great way to honor the competitors who I greatly respect. And I know Brian feels the same way. And Brian is, we got to chatting back and forth about some names. Like, I just can't see calling these guys geezers. Like, I work with this guy. This guy is my peer. And I don't know. In the core of me, I felt like the name was a little ageist, and I bring that word up, and I put it along with other isms, racism and ageism.
Discriminatory.
Even if it's like subliminal, I get it. People, who cares what you think about, if people won't come to the comp because of the name, that's their problem. And it's like, I just wanted a name for that comp that was a bit more inclusive, that everybody could get attached to, geezer or legend. That people could say, this isn't, I didn't want the name to detract from the comp. And there were people that just straight up wouldn't come because of the name. And I know that sounds crazy, but I've been around
too.
I'm always harassing the hell out of people. If you're out there and you've heard me, talk to you about this comp, I really work hard to do it lovingly, but I do put a bit of pressure on folks to get out there. I know Scotty's done it before too, because the thing is so special and we want people to go there. And even if for a moment, if the name ever detracted people, it's a horrifying feeling to me, because I want people to go there and see what it's all about, see how special it is, and to see why it is the best tree climbing comp in the world.
We should look at
that's where it came from, man. That's what I like. Brian popped off with a name, and we were like, oh my gosh, that's it.
And you know where that name came from? I'm going to cut you off. Do you know how I thought of that name when we had this original discussion? I want to tell you the dude that came up with that name, and it's not because he came up with the name. It's because he said the word, and it stuck with me. And it's one of my mentors, the man who just won geezers or legends that we're going to call it now is Jimmy.
Chris.
Jimmy says legend all the time. He's like, you're a legend, bro. He's always saying that. He's like, a legend. And that's what the Kiwis say. I mean, that's what all these dudes, they just, when you get to a certain point of work, you're a legend. Everything you do is legendary. It's not just one thing. It's like you live your life as a legend, and it comes after the time that you put in. It doesn't come with anything that you can go to class for or anything that you can get certified for, it literally comes from time. And that's how you become a legend. So,
and just sort of to interject at that point and to speak on, I think it's important to take that with a grain of salt, because, you know, when you hear this idea of legendary, I don't think that there needs to be so much as this like huge epicness to it. Whereas, like, I look at a guy like JB, who, you know, I don't think he's ever going to win a world title, but that doesn't mean that he still does not hold this legendary status just because of this special way that he got involved in tree climbing later in his career and sort of just became obsessed with it. I mean, he's putting out all sorts of media and just has this like really wonderful attitude about it. And I'm viewing it as an outsider. I mean, I've never taken place in this event, or I haven't even ever been there. So I'm just sort of speaking like as a third party looking in. But I did want to say that, you know, I saw Wes Hopper's aerial rescue, man. It was phenomenal. I mean, yeah. I watched that AR and it was like sort of one of the first ones that popped up on Facebook. And you know what? Wes Hopper is a legend, man. And when you watch his AR, dude, it was really fantastic. And I think that it really, that's probably one of my favorite parts as a person looking in, is to see such a high level of ability throughout all these different age groups. So I think that I guess that was sort of one of the things that I was most impressed with. And then on the other flip side of the coin, if you've ever hung out with a lot of these individuals that are involved with this event in a non-work atmosphere, in a sort of a social atmosphere, that legendary status still applies because they're such a good time. I mean, a lot of them are just really interesting people and have such a vast wealth of experience and knowledge that they bring to the table. And I think you can probably go down that whole list of people, and that character trait applies to each and every one of them, whether they finish 40th or whether they finish first. I mean, that was sort of one of the things that I was thinking about as I sort of followed along through social media and observed the event that way. But yeah, I definitely know that there is, I think, a personal connection there. And if you've never been a part of it, it's hard to speak to it. So I really want to watch. I don't want to step on any toes and go too deep into my assessment. But sorry to cut you off there, Chris.
That's okay, man. I'll double down on what you say. So what you're saying there. So the name change, it came out of an abundance of respect, you know. And I know, so one of the things though I learned from that is the whole, it was an uncomfortable thing and how things went down on Friday morning, and you know, the shirts coming in like they did, it was a surprise to me. You know, it was my only intention that weekend was to propose a name. It was not to change it that very weekend. So I was honest about that. And but in any case, I think in a few years from now, this is just going to become a part of the history of the comp. And I think that it, you know, in the future will be a welcome change. It just will take some time, and it's just one of those things about nostalgia. But one thing I'll say, I've got a definition here. This came from dictionary of some sort here. I didn't grab one that happened to be good. I just grabbed the first one I found. Legend: an extremely famous or notorious person, especially in a particular field. This is a giant, superstar, icon, luminary, phenomenon. And then here it says, a traditional story, sometimes popular, regarded as a historical but unauthenticated. So just something, someone who's a looms in your mind. And that's just how I felt about older guys that I used to climb with. They had this air about them, like all the stuff they've done in the past, all the dragons they've slayed, so to speak. And that's the idea I felt about them, you know? But looking back with, 5 years from now, it's just going to be a part of the history. I've beat myself up about it enough, and I'm ready to start talking about something else. All right. So that's it about the name. But again, no. It felt I needed to be addressed. And also going forward, if anyone's listening to this that's involved with that comp, my wholehearted intention, we make any other decisions, people will be consulted, and we'll going forward, there'll be a lot more discussion about even some minor changes. Okay, we're looking to put together a Facebook group for people who are involved with the comp, so we can make decisions like that together.
Nice. Speaking of togetherness, perfect segue into the next topic. BJ, you wanted to touch on a little bit of the idea of community and how it applies to the comp and to the network of people down there.
Not just down there, but everywhere. Anywhere I go that has to do with tree climbing, I feel like I'm a part of it, even before I ever get there. Mm-hmm. I feel like I'm already in. Just because I'm a part of this community online, to be honest, it's kind of stupid, but I think I joined Facebook like 5 years ago, and that's pretty raw, to be honest. I feel like most people are 10 years deep.
Totally, or somewhere, man. Around totally.
There. Or more.
No,
I'm pretty fresh on this on the scene when it comes to that, but I've been doing tree work for.
I need to get on the Insta with you guys.
The groups. I think that the groups on Facebook are another really. I think they're a good resource. I think that they can get a little convoluted with stuff, and I'm guilty of it, and I'm guilty of scrolling through all of the comments and everything that goes along with the great discussions on there. And I mean, that's part of the double-edged sword, but I do think that I think that social media has a lot to do with that networking and connecting people that have similar ideas or similar interests, even within the community of tree climbing. You sort of find personalities that you can relate to and that maybe you share similar philosophies with, and that's really sort of hashes itself out online. Sometimes I know that the digital that digital platform is also sometimes a veil for certain things, and I don't think it's a complete a perfect way to go about being social with people, but I do think that it is, I mean, just like we're doing right now, we're staying connected. And we're sharing our thoughts and we're sharing our philosophies. So, that was really a great way to look at it. I mean, do you think that you would feel the same way? Do you think that you would feel the same way going to events without it? Do you think you would feel a little more intimidated that you maybe didn't, not know it? Yeah.
I was, because before I was on Facebook, I didn't know any of these groups.
Right.
There's dudes all over the country that I run across now that were like, why haven't you been in this group? Or why haven't you been in that group?
Right, right. Mm-hmm.
I have no idea why, other than the fact that I just wasn't on Facebook. But it's just it can turn into something that is bad too. You know, the other side of that double-edged sword that you're talking about is an echo chamber, which guys can turn into this thing where it's just a constant thing where all you hear is what you want to hear, right, instead of what maybe you need to hear.
Right.
You can constantly just cover yourself in what you want to hear.
Right.
Right.
So. It's definitely a double-edged sword, like you say.
Right. No, that's that's a good point.
Great conversation that can be had. And if you're listening, Brian was launching into speaking about the sense of community, you know, and these groups are great. You get to know them online, some folks online first, and then you show up somewhere and you do already kind of know them better. And I think that's kind of what you were getting at.
Totally.
You know,
absolutely. That's what I'm getting at, because we all have the same goals.
Yes.
We just want to be better at what we're trying to be, which is an arborist.
Right.
And we all show up at these competitions primed and ready to not flaunt, but just show our
display
abilities.
Yeah.
Mm-hmm. I agree, Brian. That's a great point. And, I think that it's all a learning experience. You know, we're learning about ourselves and we're learning about each other. And I think that the better that we can understand each other and what makes ourselves tick and what makes others tick and how to be respectful around certain issues or whatever it may be. I think that it's a really good starting point to sort of realize who people are and sort of how to interact with different people out there, different opinions, different personalities. Absolutely. I think it's an important thing. So Chris, you are waiting to reveal some interesting information to the community. So we're going to bring it back over to you and let you have the floor for a few minutes to talk about those items.
Cool, man. And we run over a little bit. I know we talked about that briefly. Might be okay. Might happen.
Fine.
So we'll jump right into this. Fine. Here. And me and Brian and TC, before we went on, we discussed briefly some ideas. Brian had some ideas, of which the idea that he's got, we spoke about, we always were like, how can we make that possible? But I think with that idea he's got, we could launch NAOM to become the most sought after tree climbing competition to want to be a part of, if we can figure out what, you know, how to make it work. So he's got this idea to figure out how to get climbers to come out to what is currently an open masters and figure out how to make that a sequestered masters, so that each climber, when they enter the ring, will be making their own game plan. It will be original. You'll walk in, other climbers won't be watching your climb, so they can't hawk the climb. You walk in and your game plan is your game plan. So it's just like you're shaping your own piece of art. So that's one of the ideas that we've got maybe going into 2018. So we're going to have probably, I'm trying to do two NAOMs this year, and that's ambitious, but we're going to figure out how to do it. We want to do one in West Virginia, and I've got Stephen Connolly working on finding a site. He's got a friend that I believe he might have given me some info, and we're going to find our way back out to Wichita this year as well, probably the same time of the year, and just because it's such a killer place to work with all the people. And
dude, the trees in the woods are insane.
So, but we're looking at doing something sequestered. Can climbers still learn so much by doing that? Yes. At least one of those two, you're going to have climbs, you know, we're going to try to experiment with that. Sequestered climbs, we've got some ideas on how to make it work. But something like that, it's underground. Nothing like that has really been tried on a large scale like that. But you're gonna get a hold of the best tree climbers in the world. And that's what really draws the best competition, is when you have a format that brings in people that are honing in their game and trying to be the best at it that they possibly can be. You know, all right. What are you guys cracking up about?
No, nothing. I'm listening and getting excited.
It's deep right now, but I'm shaping this thing in y'all's mind and my mind too. That's a big idea.
I think that.
So
go ahead.
That's one idea. There's some other things happening, but I'm going to drop the bombshell on you right now. Okay. And so 2018 will be the first year that North American Open Masters, we're actually going to release this stuff tonight. We're going to release all comp financial results. We're going to make them all public. So we've got a spreadsheet that we made for Naomi. And so they're all crowdsourced. These competitions, people that are within the community, they give us money and they are saying, here, take this money. Obviously they're paying their comp dues. And at that point, it's my duty to make sure that insurance gets paid for a tree climbing competition, make sure shirts get bought. Maybe I feed them once in a day, maybe twice on the deal. So I'm telling you why this is so big is because it takes balls to do this. And, you've got to be – this is an opportunity for us to be transparent, like I said, because it's crowdsourced, you've got people digging into their pockets and saying, we trust you. We're going to give you this money, and we want you to get the stuff paid for this comp. Or, we want you to take this money and invest. So what's been happening with Naomi, with Legends, is that both of these street climbing comps are making money beyond just what it costs to run them. So they've got a surplus of funds. Some comps lose money or they break even, and not for the longest time. I'm just like, okay with that. For the longest time I've been paying for comps out of my own pocket.
Right.
Divide.
2018, we're going to disclose all that, and people will see how much money we actually, even Legends, it happens. The folks are involved with managing the finances with that comp, pull money out of their own pocket to get everything paid for initially. And then, on a wing and a prayer, everything gets paid for, because that comp specifically, we don't charge any comp fees. So we've got to raise money. We've got to do an auction. We've got to get folks to pay for their name on the shirt and make things special that way. So with Naomi, we obviously have a comp fee. I don't think we really took donations. We did take donations for Naomi. We did. We received some donations from vendors, and some folks just gave from their heart. So I'm like, you know what? If these folks are going to go forth and they want to invest in us like this, I want to be transparent. I want to put it out there and show what we're doing. And honestly, it really is an ambitious idea, but I want other competitions, ISA or otherwise, to be emboldened and to feel inclined to do the same thing. Because the people ask about it. They ask about it, and I want to remain
transparent.
I want to have transparent. I want to have my integrity intact. I don't want anyone to ask about it. And because we're accountable, and I'm cool with that. So that's the big deal. And it's kind of a nerdy thing to care about, but I think as these events grow, it's my community. It's our community of people that are giving money to us. And we're humble tree workers, man. Ain't nobody, we're not running around here bankers and lawyers and shit. We work for a living. And
I live in a tiny house.
I live in a motorhome,
I think
it's so much.
Tiny house.
Well, real quick, I really think that, I think it adds a new dynamic to the idea of competitions, in the sense that they can be a platform for, I don't want to say fundraising, but you can look at a comp in a charitable way. I mean, has there ever been a comp that has taken like 5 G's or 10 G's and given it to the tree fund or given it to the American Heart Association, or giving it to cancer research?
Why does it have to be donation based? Why can't it go back into the community that we're building?
Well, I agree with you on that point. Is the fact that with the surplus there can be investment, no matter what it is. I mean, whether it's whether it's back into the competition itself, whether it is into
the competitors,
Yeah, like, I'm into one of the, my first ideas. I think you guys would be into it because we – and one thing I need to say with Legends is all we need to always remember the friends that we made, and specifically in that comp. You have guys that – you know, they age out in the worst way, guys. You know, we have people that they whether it is they die from disease or age – since I've been there, I've seen some folks that were involved with the comp that passed away. So it's always going there. I always fear there's a couple weeks or months before the comp that someone will pass away and will be left in remembrance of those people. But I'm like, we need to remember to enjoy them while they're here.
Celebrate.
You know? but I think that having like an injured worker fund or something like that, or if a tree worker dies, like how can we help their family if there's a surplus of funds, you know?
There's other comps that do that. Well, one in particular, but I'm not going to name it at this point.
That's no, I feel as though the important thing to, I think the important thing to take away from kicking around this idea is that there, you know, there can be some real financial sustainability in being transparent, in keeping documents and making them available and getting people excited who are good at that kind of stuff. You know, some people are really good at raising funds. Some people are really good and really interested in that stuff. And I think that it is a part of it is a big part of, and it has been a big part of, and will continue to be a big part of competitions is funding them, the financials behind them and what goes into making that work and their and what the potential is behind that, you know? And honestly, I mean, just to sort of make a few closing comments, that's the thing that I hope that people take away, and especially I think it gets highlighted when you guys join me, BJ and Chris, is just the fact of having an open conversation about this stuff. I do feel that a lot of progression is an open conversation, and it's probably one of my most favorite things to experience with this whole project of the blog and the podcast is just being out there and talking to people. I mean, we touched on it already, this sense of community and sort of the inspiration that we find in others, you know, our role models, our mentors, the legends that we work with, the geezers that we work with. I feel as though all of these people affect us in very deep ways, and it all comes back to that open conversation about being an arborist, about working in the trees, about caring for the trees, and I just really want to drive that nail home that this is a platform for people to speak their mind on and be respectful and just to have really a sense of connectedness and a sense of a driving the conversation forward. So, listen, I really appreciate you guys joining me on this. I know that we get together often, but we should do it more often. Is there anything else you guys want to add before we sign off?
Brian, I think you want to say something too, but. We're dropping this spreadsheet tonight for Naom. So anyone who's listening, you're welcome to check it out. It'll be first. I'll stick it on the Naom site, and then I'm going to try to share it everywhere from there, and then explain people while we're doing it. I love it because it's an era where we can be inclusive. And like you say, if people look at that and they're like, "Hey, I'm more inclined to invest into what you guys are doing," I'm all about it. And honestly, yes, we've gone through with some ideas like. If we meet a certain quota monetarily of what we need to make to pay for the needs of the comp, whether it's in whatever we need to invest into the comp and to obviously pay for, you know, food, shirts, insurance, etc., we are going to set something up that anything outside of that, and I'll have a committee even for Naom where we'll say anything outside of that will get invested into a charity. And I am super stoked about that. This whole process, I never thought that I would be like into this and as passionate about it, but I think it's cool because of the potential for good. And then on top of that, being able to be an open book, so that just people can trust you better. That's all I have to say.
That was awesome. I love talking with you guys, and I love hanging with you guys. And, I just want to say that, for anyone out there, get over to the website, www.thearblife.com. Sign up for an email subscription, get notifications of when we post blogs, when we post, these recorded podcasts. And, I'm really, really grateful for all the support that we're getting. So thanks again, guys.